Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, listener mail. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and boy, we got a good batch of listener mail for you today. Rob, do you want to jump right in with this message about the Shanghai Jing?
Sure thing. This one comes to us from Jing. And Jing says, "Hi, Robert and Joe. Hope all is well. I've been a fan of Stuff to Blow Your Mind ever since the day I found your show." They don't say when that day is. It could have been yesterday. It could have been years ago. I don't know. But I like it that we won them over so quickly.
It was a Thursday.
They continue. "I enjoy the wide range of the topics and the depth of your discussions, which is both informational and riveting to listen to. Your recent two-part episodes on the Shanghai Jing are particularly intriguing to me. As someone from China, ancient Chinese myths and literature are very dear to me, and I really enjoyed listening to your discussions on this ancient text. When Joe mentioned the Chinese creation myth during the discussion of Hun Dun, it actually reminded me of the myth of Pangu, who was the giant that created the world in ancient Chinese mythology. In the story, Hun Dun was also the word used to describe the world before everything came into being, which was a chaotic mass like an egg. In this huge mass of Hun Dun, the giant Pangu slept. After he woke up, he swung an axe and split the world into two, the lighter part of which rose up and became the sky, and the murkier part sank down and became the earth. Pangu was worried that the earth and the sky would mingle again, so to stop the world from retrograding into the chaotic mass, like Atlas from the Greek myth, Pangu stood on the ground with his hands holding the sky. Each day the sky would rise a foot higher, and the earth would sink down a foot lower, and Pangu would grow his body long with the earth and the sky until 18,000 years had passed. After Pangu died of exhaustion, like Ymir in the Norse myth, the giant's body turned into the world we know today. His breath became the wind and the cloud. His voice became the thunder that strikes. His eyes became the sun and the moon. His limbs became the mountains. His blood became the rivers. His muscles became the soil. His hair became the stars. His skin became the grass and trees. His sweat became the rain. Shan Haijing is one of the sources we have today, which contain the most raw material of the ancient Chinese myths that survived. It's not easy to read, even for a well-educated native Chinese speaker, because it's so ancient and obscure, but it's also weird and fascinating. I'm so happy that you chose to dive into it, and as always, I feel like you did a great job presenting it to an audience who may not even have heard of it, while at the same time still managing to demonstrate its super weird and interesting aspects. I hope you stay safe, and please keep up the good work. Jing.
Oh, what a great message. Thank you, Jing.
Yeah, I really appreciate hearing about that. You know, this is the story of Pangu is really, really cool. And it's one that I actually just finished reading some about this to my son, because as part of Chinese New Year, we busted out some new to us Chinese myth and folktale books. And so we were reading some of that. And of course, it's kind of mandatory that those books have to have this cool creation story in there as well.
I'm interested that there are so many different creation myths in which the world is created out of the body of a dead god, but their like body parts don't always become exactly the same things. Mm-hmm. So I think we've talked about at least one other, maybe the inferred Proto-Indo-European creation myth, in which it's believed, I think, that the hair of the god somehow represents the vegetation of the earth, like the grass and the trees here.
Yeah.
But here, the hair is the stars. I love that difference.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's so many different ways you could pull it apart, right? Because on one hand, when a body dies, it does become the earth, you know, in a very, in a way that would be observable to ancient peoples. But then there's the whole idea of like, how do I make sense of the world beyond my body? Sometimes I turn to the metaphors of my body to do so. And then, of course, we kind of do the reverse at times as well.
It's funny. This also reminds me of the thing we talked about not too long ago. Which episode was it? I don't quite recall, but about the idea that limestone land masses are often made up largely of the body parts of things that used to be alive. You know, this rock that is now the earth. There are abiotic processes that form limestone as well, but a lot of the earth's limestone is just what used to be the shells and body parts of algae, coral, foraminifera, all kinds of, shelled critters that live in the ocean.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, you ready for this next message about brain and head theft?
Let's do it.
This is from Danny. She says, "Hey guys, I came across your show a couple weeks ago, love it, and am working my way through your archives. I've been meaning to send this email for a while. I thought you might appreciate that I was listening to your recent brain theft episode while dissecting a brain." Very good. She goes on, "A rat brain, a fetal rat brain. I'm not some weirdo, though, or at least not that kind of weirdo. I'm doing my PhD in neuroendocrinology at the University of Edinburgh, Scotland." Very interesting coincidence here, Danny, that you probably know this, but Edinburgh was a sort of ground zero for a lot of historical corpse theft and cadaver shenanigans, and it was also kind of ground zero for phrenology within Great Britain, at least. The Edinburgh Phrenological Society was one of the great fountains of quackery in the early 1800s. But Danny goes on. "So at the moment, I'm dissecting out the hippocampus, mashing it up, and growing the hippocampus cells in a dish. I'm then going to treat those cells in a dish with the stress hormone corticosterone, the rat version of cortisol, and then collect the RNA from those cells. I'm then going to do PCR for specific RNA sequences. I'm looking at the sequences the cells use to make the proteins of GABA receptors. Remember, DNA makes RNA, makes protein, makes everything. GABA receptors are essentially the traffic lights of the brain and tell the traffic to slow down or stop, making them important in regulating the signals within the nervous system. In the wider context, I'm looking at how prenatal stress programs offspring to develop anxiety in adulthood. One reason is likely changes to GABA receptors during development. So, stress in the womb leads to weird GABA receptor development, leads to increased anxiety, and changes to the normal and expected physiological stress response." Oh, that's very interesting. Maybe we'll have to follow up and do a do an episode on that hypothesis. That's very interesting. But anyway, Danny goes on,
that she's attaching a picture if we are interested. Says, feel free to share anything I say in this email, but not this picture, please. We will not share it. It comes from a rat fetus, 18th day of gestation, and is about 10 centimeters long. The hippocampus is about 4 millimeters long. It's fiddly work. And this is the little rat brain. To me, it looks like a pink fly's head. It's like with the big compound eyes and the proboscis.
Yeah, it was. I actually saw this picture before I read the content of the email, and I had no idea what I was looking at. It looks like something a pet might cough up and just cause confusion. I guess it is literally the sort of thing a pet might cough up.
But then Danny goes on a completely different note. Like I said, I'm working my way through your archives, and I recently listened to your episode on malapropisms, and it reminded me of my visual malapropisms. I grew up in Vienna, Austria, and the subway system, the U-Bahn, has these stickers letting dog owners know that dogs need to wear a muzzle. While I do understand the picture, my brain always sees something else first, a punk dog with a mohawk looking down. Maybe that says more about my musical taste. And Rob, I attached the picture for you to see. Once I read that, I see it. Yep. It's like, which is the Ninja Turtles villain with the mohawk? It's Bebop, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it does look like a mohawk.
Danny continues, the other one is the airbag icon in most cars. This one took me a long time to work out, but again, even though I understand that it's supposed to be a person with an airbag, to me, it always looks like a donkey carrying packs. I'm attaching both pictures. Hope this email elicits at least a smile. Your latest D&D playing, Lord of the Rings loving science nerd fan, Danny.
Oh, yeah, well, it's hard for me to see the donkey when I look at that icon, but if I can see where different interpretations might be possible.
I see the donkey. It reminds me of the donkey looks very put upon, like it has a large ball on its back.
It does remind me how we have different interpretations of the Stuff to Blow Your Mind logo about what the various circles and lines, what it could be interpreted as. Of course, in reality, it's supposed to be obscure. It's supposed to lend itself to different interpretations.
No, it's clearly a symbol of our allegiance to the lizard people or whatever. What's the weirdest interpretation we've heard of it?
Oh man. Sounds like somebody riding a bicycle, I think, was one. Yeah. That one is kind of hard to shake. Like, if I look at it, I can sort of see that, like some sort of stick person on some sort of stick-wheeled Susian vehicle. But also, if you turn some of the circles into eyes, you can create some sort of a weird monster face. So I like that.
It's like a Lego block, good for any game.
Yeah. All right, here's another one for us. This one comes to us from Mona, I believe. This is responding to our vault episode or episodes on Mount Vesuvius. Hello, Robert and Joe. I am enjoying the Lessons of Vesuvius episodes. I grew up 30 miles from Mount St. Helens. I was very young when her most famous eruption occurred, yet I clearly remember the earthquakes leading up to that day 41 years ago. I worked as an educational interpreter at Newberry National Volcanic Monument. Newberry, a caldera in Newberry Volcano, is northeast of Crater Lake near Bend, Oregon. Joe loved seeing Crater Lake, technically misnamed as it is a caldera, yet he felt let down by not seeing multiple lakes and a forest in the caldera. Newberry Caldera has two good-sized lakes separated and surrounded by obsidian lava flows, pumice cones and domes, hardened ash cones, cinder cones, a lot of mountain hemlock, and lodgepole pine trees, beautiful alpine and volcanic wildflowers, rare white bark pine, and a Kevin Costner film credit. Paulina Creek drains the caldera with many waterfalls and cascades as it flows off the volcano. The first and most well-known waterfall is Paulina Falls. Paulina Falls is shot in a winter scene of The Postman, circa 1997. Did you ever see this one, Joe?
I didn't, though. The main thing I know about The Postman is that there's a scene where Tom Petty is in it playing like the mayor of a future post-apocalyptic settlement. And though I've never seen it, from what I recall reading about it, Tom Petty, it is implied that he's playing himself. Like he shows up, he's unnamed in the film, and he's the mayor of this settlement. And I think Kevin Costner says to him, like, "Hey, I know you. You were famous." And he's like, "Yep."
Yeah. Well, that's kind of cool. Yeah. My only connection to this film, I never saw it, is that a guy from my hometown is like a kind of a professional cowboy. And or has been at times, and
okay.
he pops up in some of these films riding his horse, doing horse work, and he worked on that film, apparently.
Wait. When you say professional cowboy, do you mean actual professional cowboy as in, like, cattle driver or, like, works with cattle, or you mean he professionally portrays a cowboy?
What I know of him, he's driven big rigs, but he also, like, he actively has cattle and horses.
Oh, okay.
Like, so he does actual cowboy work, but then he'll, for fun, like, do a cattle drive out in the West, and he'll pop up doing horse work in movies like this. So
You know,
he's been all over the place.
So actually am a cowboy, and I play one on TV.
Yeah. Like he's a straight up. Like I'm not really exaggerating when I say he's a cowboy. He's a pro cowboy and has earned income from that. Our listener continues. I don't recall what the scene entails. I just know when the Postman was filmed across Oregon, the road into the caldera was cleared of snow that winter. This is still discussed fondly by locals who are accustomed to having only the first 10 miles of the U.S. Forest Service road plowed to reach winter recreational opportunities in the caldera. Be well, Mona.
Oh, is this a picture you found, Rob?
This is a picture I found. I just included this, just did a quick search and included this for our benefit, Joe.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I think this is picking up on something we talked about in the Vesuvius episodes, which is the indifference of nature to the geological risks, how there can be a volcanic eruption that just paves over and basically sterilizes the surrounding area. But pretty soon nature just pours back in and you can see forests and trees going into the caldera where, you know, it may well be the case that that another eruption is coming.
And then when you get a Hollywood film crew in there, it's you know, the open up roads that have never been opened before. It's amazing the kind of stuff that can happen when they hit the ground in the wilderness, in a neighborhood. They shake things up.
We know a lot about that.
Yeah.
Okay, next message comes from Alex. This is about spinning and nystagmus. Alex says, "Hello, Robert and Joe. I've been listening to your podcast for 3 or 4 years now. It makes morning commutes and work less boring." Well, I'm glad. Some of my favorite episodes are the ones about the moons of Saturn and Jupiter, but I digress. I'm writing in about your episode about spinning. You mentioned nystagmus in passing, and I thought someone was finally going to raise some awareness of an eye condition me and others have been struggling with, but no such luck. So I am writing in to attempt to do so through your listener mail segment. Basically, I was born with a condition called congenital nystagmus, meaning that it has been there from birth, and it is exactly as you described in your spinning episode. My eyes constantly move from side to side, and the intensity can increase or decrease according to stress or other factors. It can even get to the point where my head can move slightly in the same manner depending on the level of stress or if I'm focusing really hard on a given task. The reason that I, and I'm willing to bet anyone else with this condition, wants people to be aware is that it is very much impossible to make eye contact when having conversations, for obvious reasons, so it makes certain situations uncomfortable. And people who may not be aware may write us off as weirdos or crazy because they just see our eyes going crazy, but it is very much not intentional. As far as living with the condition itself goes, you would think that from the eye movements that we would always see things moving, but in reality, we see things normally. However, this comes at a hefty cost. Basically, the way it was explained to me is the brain has to compensate for the movement, so the actual vision takes a major hit. In my case, I'm considered legally blind as a result, which is defined as central visual acuity of 20/200 or less in the better eye with best correction. I choose not to drive, even though I passed both my practical and written tests on the first try due to this, but this would also make the test you discussed for drunk drivers that police are using a bit problematic. Oh, yeah. Anyway, that is all I know, and there is no possible cure until stem cell research progresses more, since, at least in my case, it appears to be damage to the optical nerve. If you decide to research further into this and further inform people, I would really appreciate it, Alex. Well, thanks for letting us know, Alex. Yeah, no, I didn't know anything about that. I may have seen a line or something about there being other conditions that cause nystagmus other than just like spinning around.
Yeah, very interesting. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. A-S-T-E-P-R-O allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month. Taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, here's another listener mail. This one comes to us from James. Dear Robert and Joe, long time, second time. I'm writing in because of your listener mail Nightmare Key episode. Rob mentions a particular relaxing miniature painter on YouTube, but doesn't mention them by name. I'm almost certain I know who you're talking about, but he definitely deserves the shout-out. Is it Goobertown Hobbies? Brent manages to combine a knowledge of miniature and many adjacent hobbies with a laid-back tone similar to Norm Abram on This Old House. Great Sunday morning coffee time programming. if it's not Goobertown, shout out to him anyway. He's great. Whomever you were referring to totally deserves a mention, and I'm sure a portion of your audience would love their content. Anyway, love all the shows you two do. Sorry to harass you about YouTubers. Keep doing what you're doing. All the best, James from Michigan. Thanks, James. So it's not Goobertown Hobbies, but I looked them up and they look very interesting. I dig the vibe, so I'm going to have to subscribe to that channel. I thought I maybe name dropped this individual, but here it is again. Anyway, the main one I was talking about is this guy named Sorastro, Sorastro. And he does these YouTube videos where he's painting models from Star Wars Legion, but also from the Lord of the Rings games and a Marvel game, various stuff. And I just find him very relaxing and also very informative for the hobby. But I also really like some other videos that I've seen, the official Warhammer videos that cover basics like painting pale flesh and so forth. I found those super, super good and very informative. There's also a guy from Australia named Zorpazorp that's also very helpful, a little more high energy, but also just very helpful content for anyone out there who's either learning miniature painting for the first time or looking to make, you know, gradual improvements in their mini painting game.
I am only getting a keyhole view into this world. I have no idea.
Yeah, well, that's the great thing is that now it's there. I mean, this is one of the great things about YouTube and the internet, because like when I was a kid, I remember my dad had these magazines about painting and all. And yeah, there were hobby stores you could go to, but it seemed like it would have been a lot harder to pick up like all the little tips of the trade. And now you can watch these videos and, you know, they'll list out the things you need. They'll show you, you get to actually watch, you know, like through their eyes, really, as they're painting. I find it very helpful.
YouTube is such an interesting and highly divergent force in our world. I mean, it is so great and so terrible. YouTube, the great and terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's got like some of the absolute worst of us you can find on YouTube. But then there's great stuff. Like I mentioned that Ants Canada page recently. My son's been super into that. Like he's super into ants now. Like he's telling me things about ants that I didn't know. You know, and we've done content about ants in the last year, but he's still busting out ant species and wowing me with it. And it's, you know, it's from YouTube that he's learning these things. I just tell him to stay out of the comments. Just do not look, look down there.
Oh God.
Even if it's about ants, I'm sure there's some horrible stuff in the comments. Yeah.
All right, this next message comes to us from Blair. It is about I think we ran a Vault episode about Kamamuda.
Yes.
Blair says, "Hi, Robert and Joe. I was listening to the recent Vault episode about Kamamuda." Oh, yeah, I guess we did. And it got me thinking about the recent viral popularity of sea shanties. For context, though I'm sure it was hard to avoid hearing about this bizarre trend, a Scottish mail carrier recently uploaded a video of himself singing a shanty on the video sharing service TikTok, which inspired many other users to layer their own videos on top of his to create impressive harmonies. Sea shanties served to keep sailors working in sync while performing grueling physical labor aboard sailing vessels. Each song was designed to complement a particular repetitive task. For example, the song "Blow the Man Down" was used to keep sailors in time while hoisting topsail. I would speculate that sailors singing these traditional shanties would have felt a great feeling of communal oneness singing these call-and-response songs while working on a common and challenging task. I also wonder how much Kamamuda plays into viral internet trends more broadly. Once a given trend gets big enough to become a thing, I imagine that many new contributors are motivated by the feeling of being a part of a larger movement. Thank you for making such a quality show. I listen to your shows as soon as they hit my feed. I love Weird House Cinema, and y'all have turned me on to some amazingly weird movies to torment my fiance with. All the best, Blair. I got to say, I was only in the vaguest sense peripherally aware of the TikTok sea shanty thing. I think I realized I'm just like, I've mostly extracted myself from social media these days. So there's a lot going on the internet that I'm just not aware of.
Yeah, I didn't know about this until Stephen Colbert did a bit on it. But it's cool. I saw the footage of the different layered sea shanty singers, and yeah, it's kind of neat. They're not doing any manual labor in it. It should be stressed.
Well, there's one thing that I don't think we actually talked about in the Kamamuda episode, or if we did, I forgot about it, which is the potential feelings of reciprocal communal trust that are often forged just by labor, by like working together with people on a project, which in certain circumstances can easily create division and strife. But there, I guess it depends on what type of project it is and what the people working on it with you are like. There are some projects that just really naturally, I think, bring people together with bonds. Projects that are like conceptually simple but physically difficult.
I mean, like certain, like basic yard care can be like that. Like I'm thinking of like church service projects where you like go and help somebody, you know, who needs their yard cleaned up for the fall, or they need ice scraped up in the winter, that sort of thing. Those can be very rewarding. You know, you're not doing anything that's necessarily, you know, conceptually hard to deal with. You know, like it's pretty basic what you need to do. You need to pick up a bunch of leaves or, you know, something of that nature. But it can bring you together, and it can be challenging, and yeah, you kind of emerge from it bonded. I guess that's why you see, for a variety of reasons, workplaces sometimes do service projects, but you can see it definitely as a way to you know, build these bonds among the various employees.
Yeah. I feel like the kind of work that's more apt to cause division between people is that which like which could be accomplished through varying different strategies, and it's not exactly clear which strategy is the best one.
Yeah. And I guess you can run into that even with stuff like raking leaves. If someone is really firm about it, and they're like, no, this is the way. You have to pick up two rakes and use them like claws, that sort of thing.
That's a stupid method. I've tried it.
What if you have the special like Freddy Krueger rake hand things that you can get?
Those things are a scam.
All right. I haven't really tried them, but they look kind of neat. Like it's good marketing because they're like, hey, you know that thing that isn't all that fun? Here's the vague promise that it could be fun if you bought our claws.
You could do it with Hulk hands, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm kidding, by the way. I was just trying to create some unnecessary division. I'm sure if you enjoy using the scoop hands, that's fantastic.
All right.
There's no wrong way to rake, folks.
Now, our apologies to Blair's fiance regarding Weird House Cinema, but this is a great segue into some Weird House Cinema listener mail. This one comes to us from Rob, and they say, hey, Rob and Joe, listening to you two talk about your TV and film influences in past episodes and then hearing you discussing where you've seen George Buza, I think I might be able to solve the mystery. In the TV series The Adventures of Sinbad, 1996 through 1998, George played Dubar, Sinbad's older brother. Maybe I'm wrong, but that was my first time I remember seeing George on screen. All your episodes are highlights of my week's podcast listening time. Thanks and be safe, gentlemen. Rob and Joe, just for you and me and you and for the two of us, I found a picture of the Buza as this character on Sinbad and included it for us.
What a transcendent Buza face. That is so good. His beard is as thick and luxurious as like moss. It's just, you know, it's otherworldly. And he does look like he could be Sinbad's older brother because he's, you know, I can imagine him grabbing Sinbad and giving him noogies.
I only vaguely remember the Sinbad show. I had to look it up here. Like the guy who played Sinbad was, well, first of all, it was not Sinbad, the stand-up comedian. It was a guy named Zin Gessner, who I don't think I was familiar with.
I don't know if I was familiar with this show. I was, when I grew up, I was very familiar with the Ray Harryhausen Sinbad movies, especially Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger. Those movies have amazing, delicious stop-motion animation, great monsters. Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger has a has a bunch of stop motion skeletons. It has a robot minotaur called the Minotaun.
Oh, nice.
Maybe we should talk about this movie for Weird House sometime. But it also, like, it's got a lot of the, you know, tragic old stuff, like the casting just like some white hunk as Sinbad. And
yeah,
and he's just like, hello, I'm Sinbad. And it's very ridiculous. Oh, and Eye of the Tiger also has a really funny, like, Greek philosopher type figure character who comes into it, whose name is Melanthius, and he's played by this classic British actor, but he's supposed to be, I think, some kind of combination of, like, Socrates and Archimedes and also knowing magic.
Yeah, it'd be neat to, we should consider doing a Sinbad movie in the future, or at least some sort of Ray Harryhausen. I don't think have we done a proper Ray Harryhausen movie?
Oh, I don't know if we have, but some of my favorite special effects of all time are his stop motion monsters.
Yeah, I think maybe we've discussed things that are Harryhausen-esque, but not Harryhausen himself.
All right, this next message comes from Keith. Keith says, hello, Robert and Joe. It was recently mentioned on one of your podcasts that the correct pronunciation for what is spelled Warwick, as in Warwick Davis, is Warwick. This made me think about the gap between what's said and what's heard. It was mentioned that even when the Warwick version is used, Warwick is heard. I think you said this, right, Rob?
That's particular to me. I don't know if anyone else has that experience, but yeah, that was what I said.
Well, I don't know about in this example, but I mean, yeah, it's totally common that you can, or at least I can, have heard a word pronounced out loud, but I would still be inclined to pronounce it the incorrect way that I read it first. Like if I read the word for a long time before ever hearing it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, going on with Keith's message, I first noticed this when I heard my wife speaking Spanish with someone. I took 5 years of Spanish, and normally I recognize about 20 to 25% of the words a Spanish speaker says. But when my wife speaks Spanish, I understand somewhere around 75 to 80%. This left me confused about why familiarity with a speaker would increase my understanding so much. The best thing I could come up with is I'm more adept at inferring phonetic sounds that were meant to be conveyed as compared to what was heard when spoken by my wife. I'm curious about how this gap plays a role in everyone's lives. Keith. Thanks, Keith. And yeah, I think this is a really interesting question. I think there could be a lot of potential answers to it, but one thing I would guess is that knowing your wife very well, you were probably really attuned also to her, to the meaning communicated through her facial expressions and body language and all that, which acts as a sort of secondary reinforcer to the meaning of sentences. So what might normally kind of go past you really fast in a spoken language that you're not super fluent in, you can sort of get like a comprehension boost by getting the visual aid of seeing someone who you know very intimately speaking. But phonetic differences could also be the same. Like if you're just like very familiar with the way your wife talks versus the way people in general talk.
Yeah. And plus it also goes without saying, you have that simulation version of the person that you know in your head. And so you're sort of running all that information through that simulation as well.
Yeah.
All right, here's another one. This one comes to us from Chris. Hello, Rob and Joe. I loved your episode on Free Jack.
Oof.
As the driver of a wine delivery truck in Southwest Ohio, I can say for a fact that you cannot outrun a police interceptor in one.
Wait, have you tried?
that does beg the question, doesn't it? It raises the question. Anyway, they continue. Keep up the great work. I've listened to you guys for years, but this is the first time writing in. Sincerely, Chris. P.S., might I suggest the movie Split Second, starring Rutger Hauer for Weird House Cinema? Okay, so two things. First of all, what is he talking about? For people who didn't listen to the Free Jack episode, there's this fabulous wine. I included a picture of it here for us, Joe. It says champagne. Mm-hmm. It's this bulky, old-looking truck. Not a futuristic vehicle at all, but our hero in Free Jack jumps into it and drives off, and there's a big car chase with it. I commented that it looks like the sort of vehicle that Ronnie Vino from At Home with Amy Sedaris would drive around.
At one point, we see some bottles tumble out of it, and if I remember correctly, they don't look like normal champagne bottle green. They look like Gatorade green. They're like bright neon green. But I mean, guess, hey, it's the future. It's 2009,
yeah.
Baby.
Yeah, that's the future. That's the fad. And I love it, actually, in the screenshot, too, I'm pretty sure I recognize. I don't know specifically what building that is, but that does very much look like Atlanta in the background.
Yeah, it does. I think that whole chase sequence was Atlanta.
Yeah. Now, as for Split Second starring Rutger Hauer, yes, I saw this movie sometime in the last year or two, and I absolutely loved it. I think I was telling Joe about it as well. Like, Joe, you got to see this. Rutger Hauer's great. He's smoking a cigar. He's cussing out a dog. there's a lot to love about this film.
Okay. Well, let's do it.
Yeah, well, we'll put it on the list, the growing list of movies to consider for Weird House Cinema. But yeah, thanks for writing in. Thanks for sharing your expertise with outrunning the law or failing to outrun the law in a wine truck, but also recommending some films for us.
Okay, well, I think that about does it for today. But huge thanks to everybody for writing in.
Yeah, and yeah, hey, since it came up, if your name's Warwick, if your name is Warwick, if there's some sort of interesting way or a specific way we should be pronouncing your name, include that in your listener mail because that'll help us out. And hey, throw in those pronouns as well. That also helps us out. We would, of course, love to hear from everybody. Yeah, keep the emails coming. If you have thoughts on these listener mails, if you have thoughts on episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, episodes of Weird House Cinema, suggestions for the future, all of that's fair game. Just write in, let us know. And in the meantime, if you want to check out other episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, they publish on Tuesdays and Thursdays in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed. Weird House Cinema publishes on Fridays. And then we got listener mail on Monday. We got Artifact on Wednesday and a Vault episode on the weekend.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.